There are a lot of different entities that are out there that are focused on developing construction talent. But one area that we've seen just a real decline for the last 40 years, and really this is, you know, where the chickens are coming home to roost, it's in the development of the construction trades by getting young people interested in the possibility of construction careers.
Welcome to another NFIB California podcast. I'm Tony Melandra, NFIB California Senior Media Manager. We're proud to have this podcast supported in part by Five Star Bank, serving customers through specialized banking solutions for entrepreneurs, business owners, and community leaders in Northern California. Today's guests will discuss the state of commercial and residential construction and other related topics. Here to introduce our guest is John Kabatek, NFIB California State Director. Welcome, John.
Well, thank you, Tony. I am so thrilled to welcome a great personal friend and friend to NFIB, small business owners, and California job creators, my good friend Tim Murphy, who is the president and CEO of the Sacramento Regional Builders Exchange, where Tim has served in that role since 2015. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim's awesome. I've just known him for so long. You're going to find out. We just have such a good time talking. He brings this incredible track record of executive leadership, corporate public affairs, strategic communications, government relations, all kinds of stuff to the association. And I know they serve more than 900 companies, and they've been in existence since, get this, 1901, before Betty White was even born. That's wild. And Sacramento Regional Builders Exchange is also a great partner with the sponsor of these NFIB California podcasts, Five Star Bank. I'm going to let Tim tell you a little bit more about his organization, but I first want to take a minute and brag on Tim Murphy. Tim has, frankly, since 2015, been the president and CEO of Sacramento Region Builders Exchange. But before that, from 2000 to 2015, Tim directed Corporate Responsibility Program for Aerojet Rocketdyne Holdings and its Easton Development Company subsidiary, overseeing their entire community and government relations program, their corporate philanthropic giving program, environmental and community affairs, all kinds of stuff for them. Before that, he served in Kaiser Permanente's Government and Community Relations Department, and he was also on the staff of former California State Senator Tim Leslie. He was also public affairs consultant for the McClellan Air Force Base Department of Environmental Management, where he supported their community affairs program. And Tim's a past member of the Executive Committee of the Sacramento Metro Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors and a board member of the Capital Airshow Group. I love watching that air show. And he served as an appointed planning commissioner for both Sacramento County and the city of Elk Grove. Tim is a native of Sacramento. He's a graduate of Jesuit High, and he got his BA in government from Sacramento State, where they honored him with a Distinguished Alumni Award in 2016. And speaking of awards, Tim was more recently recognized this year in 2022 as one of Sacramento's most admired CEOs by the Sacramento Business Journal. Tim and his wife, Kathleen, have two sons, Declan and Jack, and a granddaughter recently, Coral Bell. And one of his proudest accomplishments is the founding of what he's called the Murphy 400 Fund. It's a Vitalant community blood fund that has collected more than 1,500 pints of blood, platelets, and plasma since 2006 in honor of the life-saving services that were provided to his sons during his wife's pregnancies. That's pretty awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not exactly sure when Tim Murphy sleeps, but I'm glad that he stayed awake just a little bit longer to join us today. Let's give a warm welcome to our very good friend, to NFIB, Five Star, and Small Business, and to myself, of course, Tim Murphy. Tim, welcome.
Hey, John. Thanks very much. It's great to be here and really honored to be on the show. And thank you very much for that kind introduction. Hopefully we didn't put too many of your listeners to sleep.
And no, it's awesome. And how's it like being a grandfather? And you're too young to be a grandfather. What's going on here?
It's the best thing in the world. Our granddaughter was a COVID blessing that happened. And the only regret is that she's 750 miles away in Flagstaff. So we get down there as often as we can, but to steal from what my father used to say, if I knew that grandkids were this much fun, I would have had them first.
Yeah, I have heard that. So I'm still hopefully a few more years off before that, but we're excited for you. Well, Tim, thanks for joining us. Listen, let's just talk a little bit about these builders exchanges. You know, Sacramento Regional Builders Exchange is one of the most prominent ones in California. You've been around since 1901. Wow. Many of them have been in existence a little less than that, but for at least for decades. And I think there's about 16 exchanges with 22 locations around the state. I could be off a little bit, but
that's about right.
Tell us a little bit about what is a builders exchange and tell us a little bit about your organization, who you are and why you are. Why do you exist?
Sure. Well, builders exchanges came about in the late 1800s. While we are one of the oldest in California, we are not the oldest. But essentially, if you were a developer and you wanted to build a building, you had an architect, and that architect would hand draw a plan, and then you wanted it to get out to as many construction companies to bid on that. But you didn't want your architect to spend all the time drawing copies of hand-drawn plans, a very time-consuming process. That's where builders exchanges were created. We became a repository for project plans. So developers could come in, they could check out the plans, do their takeoff and their calculations, their estimates, and then put the plans back in the plan room for the next builder to take a look at, so they could put in for their competitive bid. Over the years, builders exchanges have evolved. Obviously, with the advent of the internet, our plan rooms are now virtual and online. All the builders exchanges in California cooperate together in a statewide plan room that we have offerings for our members, where they can come in and they get proactive emails telling them what plans and projects have been entered in the plan room since they last logged in. And they can set filters to say what kind of projects that they're interested in, so they can have plans actually delivered into their inbox. So that's the primary offering that we have for our members. But when people ask me in general, what's a builders exchange, I like to tell them it's kind of like a construction chamber of commerce. We serve our local communities with programs and services that are necessary in those communities. And basically here in Sacramento, what our objective is we want our members to bid, to build, and to thrive. We do a lot of programs to help them be successful in their businesses.
How many would you say, just guesstimate, or maybe you know a specific number, how many contractor members belong to exchanges in the state? How many are, I think we said there are about 900 actual companies that are members of Sacramento Regional Builders Exchange, but how many around the state of California, and are they considered small businesses, most of them?
Yeah, the majority of the companies that are in builders exchanges, you know, they span all sizes of companies. We have some companies that are national construction, general contracting companies that are in multiple states, but the majority of our members tend to be, you know, what we call the mom and pop shops, the small businesses, the single operators, whether it's somebody who does, you know, bricklaying or glazing or electrical work with a small crew. That's the majority of our members. But across the state, amongst all the exchanges, we estimate about up to 25,000 members. They're not all necessarily general contractors. While we do have, our organization has general contractors and all the subcontracting trades, our membership also includes material suppliers, architects, engineers, and then we even get down to the companies that provide the ancillary support to construction companies, like, for example, Five Star Bank, one of our members, and a construction lender. They're a very prominent member of our organization. So if anybody wants to serve the commercial construction industry, you can find them usually as a member of a builders exchange.
Yeah, you have a great relationship with Five Star Bank. Again, our great sponsor for these podcasts, but they're just a great organization. And it's funny, I think one of my last great memories with you, Tim, was having a holiday cocktail before we were going off on different trips and family things in the Five Star Bank conference room, I think. Was that
That's right.
At your exchange. So
Five Star is a sponsor of our boardroom, and we're very privileged to have them as a member. They're a great company and just a wonderful bank.
Amen to that. Do the exchanges, you told me a little bit about the plan rooms and the bidding and the networking and obviously that part. How about other services for your members or for members of exchanges? Things like HR issues, CalOSHA, you know, health insurance. Are there other things? What other types of services are typically shared, or are they?
Well, I have to go back and say a mentor of mine when I first came to work at the Builders Exchange was Keith Woods, who ran the Builders Exchange in the Santa Rosa area for more than 30 years. And he told me when I started, Tim, if you've seen one Builders Exchange, you've seen one Builders Exchange. That was his way of telling me that builders exchanges serve the specific needs of the communities that they serve. And some of those needs can be very different as you go from different parts of the state. Here in Sacramento, what I'd like to say from my elevator pitch is that we solve our members' five biggest problems. Through our plan room, we solve the problem of where they find their next job. We do a lot in the area of workforce development, so we help them find their next employee. Through our safety and education classes, we help keep their people safe on the job and growing in their careers. Through our government advocacy channel, we solve the problem of governmental overreach into our industry. That's probably as polite of a way as I can put it. And then last, through our networking events, we help them meet the people with whom they want to do business. So we like to say, we'll take on the job of managing the industry so you can focus on growing your business.
Excellent. We talked a little bit about your granddaughter, but thinking a few years older than that and talking a little bit now more about some youth, there's a great nexus. Not only you loving your granddaughter and your kids, but you loving working to help serve youth at the Sacramento Regional Builders Exchange. Tell us a little bit. I know that's very near and dear to your heart in terms of youth and construction, workforce development. This really fires you up, Tim. Go at it.
You're right, in a huge way. So when I came on the job 7.5 years ago, as I was meeting with our members, I would talk to them about their membership in the exchange, how business was going for them, and what their needs were. And you know, I would hear the same thing, you know, proud to be a member of the exchange. Business is doing great. We have a lot of work going on right now with a good backlog of projects to work on. But the thing that challenges us the most is having a reliable workforce to do the work. And, you know, there are a lot of different entities that are out there that are focused on developing construction talent. But one area that we've seen just a real decline for the last 40 years, and really this is, you know, where the chickens are coming home to roost, it's in the development of the construction trades by getting young people interested in the possibility of construction careers. I know when I was growing up here in Sacramento, I went to Kit Carson Middle School. And I took wood shop and I took metal shop, not because I thought I would go into a career in the trades. I knew my path was college, but I just wanted to have that, you know, that learning experience. I wanted to learn how to fix things with my hands. Also at that same time, one of my teachers, a science teacher, bought personally his first desktop computer and did an after school computer club. And the number of kids that flocked to that, it's easy to see why the focus of education went more towards tech and computers, and the drive for getting kids career technical education really started to wane. You know, college was viewed as being the objective that every student should be striving for. And you know, here we are now 40 years later, and we're seeing the numbers of people who are in construction. The workers are aging out. The pipeline to bring in new talent is thinning. And so we are focused on getting high school kids interested in construction-based careers. And we do that through a number of programs. For the kids who are on a collegiate route, we have a program called the Create Mentoring Program. And this is where we bring industry experts into the classroom. The kids, it's a semester-long program in the fall. And the kids, they are presented with a fictional request for proposal. And they work with mentors from architecture, engineering, and construction management. And they go through all the steps it takes to answer that RFP, to conceive of the design, what kind of engineering goes into it, how do you manage the costs and the material management and the schedules for developing that project. Mm-hmm. At the end of the semesters, the kids come together in a presentation competition where they pitch to an audience of industry judges. Here's what they've learned. Here's what their project is. And then they're judged on that. And there's an award ceremony and scholarships in a banquet that goes along with that. And it's a really cool thing. But for the kids who don't have college in their future for whatever reason, it might be by choice, it might be by family circumstance, we run a couple of programs that have been growing significantly. The one that we're approaching, I think, our 38th year next year, it's the Design Build Competition. And this is where we have students come together. It's a small construction team from high schools. And using materials that are donated by our sponsors, they come together over a 2-day period in the spring, and they build a 9x12 shed structure that they have done the design work themselves. Those designs are reviewed by an architect to make sure that they meet the structural integrity requirements for a construct such as it is.
Right.
But they come together over a two-day period, and the kids are judged again by a panel of judges, and they're judged on design, teamwork, construction quality, and safety. And so it's a real great chance for kids to come together, swing some hammers, and build projects, which some cases, some schools have built tiny homes that have been donated to victims of wildfires in the north parts of the state. Other sheds are used as support structures for charitable organizations, and some schools sell the sheds that they build in order to buy materials to use for their shop class programs.
Cool.
Those are the two big programs that we run. One additional program that we do is a career trades day. And we have been doing more of these as we partnered with our fellow builders exchanges up and down the state. A trades day is where we bring in construction professionals from all aspects of the trades. Kids come in, they're able to do hands-on exhibits with the construction companies and get their questions answered about what types of career opportunities exist in the trades. This has been growing tremendously. Between all of our programs, about 7 years ago, we were serving about 300 kids. And this year, we are expected to serve 7,000 students in California and now in Texas, where our Workforce Foundation just recently opened an office in Dallas.
Unbelievable. I love it. And I love that you're training young people to not only build and see the prospects of great, well-paying, promising careers, like careers, not just little spot summer jobs, but also giving back. You know, helping, you know, those in fire ravaged regions and building those things, those sheds and those other things that are giving back. I have a word I've used when I've been at NFIB, which is philanthropreneur. You're teaching kids to be entrepreneurs and philanthropists all in one. And I admire that so much.
Definitely. You know, it came out of an innovation that we did with the design build competition. You know, there are some schools in our area that do have great CTE in woodworking programs. Mm-hmm. There are some schools who have opted to participate in our program where it might be an after-school program that's taught by a teacher as a club. Some of those kids who don't have the shop facilities that are fully, you know, that are flush with lots of equipment, they have had some struggles in completing their sheds in the time period. So we thought, hey, you know what, let's create an open competition. So students who were from smaller schools or were smaller programs, they might, instead of building a 9x12 shed, they might opt to build a doghouse or a chicken coop, something that might be a little bit smaller that they could finish within 2 days. But some schools, seeing that we had the open competition, they sized up and we did get some larger structures, some more creative items, including some tiny homes. And so we have encouraged that, and we've been able to work with certain nonprofits that have helped to put those tiny homes in the hands of those who've been impacted by the wildfires in the north part of the state.
Very, very cool. We'll be right back with more from Tim Murphy right after this.
Hi, I'm James Beckwith, President and CEO of Five Star Bank. We are excited to help bring you this series of podcasts focused on small business concerns in conjunction with the NFIB. When Five Star Bank was founded in 1999, it was business and community leaders, local entrepreneurs, who wanted to create the sort of personalized banking services they desired themselves. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. A true understanding of the needs of small business owners. I know a meaningful relationship with a banker can be hard to find. At Five Star Bank, we are responsive, understand your business, and are committed to your success. We want to be a part of your growth and a valued partner supporting your vision and your dreams. You'll find direct access to a banker, complete online and mobile business banking you need to succeed. As an SBA preferred lender, let us help you with your startup business or existing business. If you're looking to make a change, please give us the opportunity to demonstrate what our personalized banking services could mean for you. I promise you individual attention from our colleagues who understand your business and are as committed to your success as you are. You can find us online at fivestarbank.com.
Let me ask you something, shifting a little bit to kind of the landscape, if you will, right now of what's going on in California. You know, without getting too deep in the weeds on too much stuff, you know, Tim, the legislature at the time of this podcast, it's September 2022, the legislature just wrapped up their 2022 session. I won't say the lunatics have left the asylum. I would be more respectful than that. But they have gone back to their districts, and all of them are campaigning, I'm sure. But, you know, let me ask you on a positive note, since we've been talking positive with the students and the youth and all that. What are some things of this past year where things have been trending really well, where you and your members feel things are moving in the right direction? And then maybe I'll flip that coin over. The second part of what we can talk about is just what are those challenges that are still looming that our leaders still need to address?
Sure. Well, we had a really solid year as far as advocacy goes at the state capitol. We do have a statewide advocacy organization that's housed within the Builders Exchange. It's called the California Builders Alliance. Mm-hmm. And we work with the other builders exchanges in the state to advocate on behalf of what our issues are. You know, being California, you know, we did have the opportunity to bring some things forward that we view as being very positive. You know, again, hearkening on what I mentioned about communities that were ravaged by fire, we were advocates for a bill that was passed that would allow for residential construction in wildfire ravaged areas to allow those owners to rebuild to the building standards of which their homes were originally constructed, because insurance payouts for fire damaged homes may not necessarily cover the costs that are incurred today with the enhanced building codes. You know, every couple of years, there are new building codes. And so we wanted to be sure that people who lost their homes and everything due to fire, right, that their insurance payouts would be able to replace their homes. And, you know, while our organization does focus primarily on commercial construction, we were happy to advance this on behalf of our partner exchanges that are in the rural areas that were really hit hard by these wildfires. So that was something that was really successful. We've also been successful in recent years to get more consistent funding allocated into the state budget for career technical education for high schools for you know, all areas of CTE, but specifically, you know, with us advocating for construction. Yeah. We've had great success with that. We will continue to move forward with the next session to continue to advocate for more state funding into career technical education to help meet the needs of those kids who may not have college in their future. On the other side of the coin, as you said, this being California, there were a number of bills that we did oppose, just trying to prevent the further overregulation of our industry. You know, it's not surprising that California has about 100,000 more regulations on the books than the next most regulated state in the country. Mm-hmm. But some of the things that we fought this year, as I said, we had a successful year. We were able to, for every bill that we weighed in on this year that we opposed, the bill either died in the process or was amended in such a way that we were able to remove our opposition. So we had a really good year with a lot of bills that we initially had concerns with, where they came out to a great result. There were a couple of bills that we did have to fight hard to get killed. You might have seen recently, it was reported that CEQA lawsuits have challenged almost all of the housing projects proposed for development in California. Mm-hmm. CEQA continues to be a major obstacle in.
And just for our listeners who may not be familiar, just quickly mention what CEQA is.
Oh, I'm sorry, the California Environmental Quality Act. So these are the environmental hurdles that a project must pass through in order to be constructed in the state of California. It is over and above over NEPA, which is the National Environmental Protection Act, which generally prescribes all the environmental issues that a development project must meet. But California being California, we have to go over and above what's being done at the national level. But that being said, there was a legislator who proposed a significant expansion of CEQA and would have made social justice analysis a component of CEQA. And so, as I said, if there weren't enough reasons within CEQA to challenge nearly half of the housing that was being sought to be built in California, this really would have expanded even more upon that. But the coalition that we were a part of was successful in beating back that measure. And then more closer to the construction industry, we were also able to defeat a bill early on in the session that dealt with certification of wood products brought into the state. This particular legislator had a concern about the deforestation of hardwoods from around the world. You would have to have a proof of lading of what the origins of those woods, what woods came from, not just hardwoods, but all wood products. That would have caused major supply chain challenges, which we're already going through because of COVID and the aftermath of that, but we were able to get that bill defeated early on in the session. So we really had a great year. What remains on the desk is it's a bill that we're anticipating the governor to sign. It has to do with legislation on workers' rights protection related to the consumption of cannabis during non-working hours. Because our industry is obviously so safety focused, we wanted to be sure that there was an exemption put in place for the building and construction industries to make sure that those safety issues that we have in the industry are held to. That bill is currently pending action on the governor's desk, and we're hopeful that he'll sign that.
Got it. And, you know, you mentioned supply chain just real quick, and I know this has been a great discussion. Just, again, at the time of this discussion, it's September 2022. Tim, do you feel the supply chain disruption issue is starting to kind of wane? Has it peaked? Where do you feel it is right now with your members and with the industry?
Yeah, as I talk to my members, it is starting to abate a little bit. In certain areas, we've seen where construction material costs have gone down. So that is certainly helping a little bit. Speaking to my members who do HVAC and air conditioning systems, not just for residential, but for large commercial buildings, they're finding that the lead time for getting the major systems for that is still about a year out. So it all depends upon the materials, but things are starting to ease up a little bit, but there's still definitely a long way to go. You know, one of the areas in particular that is of a concern, it's with the transport of these materials. And from, you don't think about necessarily about with all the trucks on the road, we still need a lot more truckers that are around to deliver these materials, and certainly a lot more dock workers at the ports who can transport the materials from ships to the docks for the truckers to take and deliver to distribution centers.
A lot of talk these days, with good reason, about housing or lack of housing being a big issue in California. Tim, what are you hearing from your exchange members? What's the story there? What's the truth?
Well, so just to remind you, my members, the Building Industry Association, yeah, their members focus on building new single family housing. My members build everything else. So multifamily housing is what my members do. And it's definitely something that we've been tracking. We're pleased to see that there is a strong uptick that's happening in multifamily housing around the country. It's up 23% from the last year. Mm. So hopefully the more construction of multifamily within our region will help to exacerbate some of those housing concerns. You know, certainly with home building, or with home prices rather, being still high and out of reach for a lot of people, the more rental properties that we have, multifamily units, apartments and whatnot, can certainly help to bring some of those rents down. One of the areas that we are concerned about is when certain jurisdictions are using reach codes to implement local ordinances for building that get out ahead of what the state code schedules are prescribing. Mm-hmm. We do worry that that can drive multifamily development to areas outside of our region, you know, where the cost to build would be a little less because they're complying with state regulations and not having local ordinances adding additional layers of expense. If you continue to layering the expense of additional mandates on top of what are already expensive project costs, you know, it'll drive investment to communities where it's cheaper to build, even if those savings are marginal.
Yeah. Well, and with the Fed's news about interest rates rising, I mean, are your members fearing a slowdown in construction, or are you kind of holding steady right now? What's the story there?
It's holding a little steady, but it is starting to move a little bit. Non-residential construction planning in July was at a 14-year high, but the latest reports I've seen show that there was a minor dip in August, and analysts think that that is signaling that the rising of interest rates and fear of a pending recession might now be beginning to stall some upcoming projects. What I've seen is that some of these studies also measure the sentiment of construction executives. Mm-hmm. And between Q1 of 22 and Q2 of 22, there was a 17-point drop. The CEO, the confidence level dropped to below 50% to 44%. It was down from 61%. Anything below 50% indicates a pessimistic outlook for construction in the coming year. So there are a lot of people, especially construction, the CFOs for large construction companies, they're feeling much more trepidation over what might be coming over the next year.
Okay, and I guess my last question has a royal twang to it. God bless the Queen and God save the Queen. I know yesterday at the time of this taping, Queen Elizabeth passed, and just a wonderful leader, and she will be missed. And now we have King Charles, I guess, coronated or going to be now taking over. Let me ask you.
God save the King.
God save the King, absolutely. Tim, if you were king, if you had the crown on your head, what would be one problem here in California that you would single-handedly resolve for your exchange members, for the industry?
Well, not to repeat myself, but it is workforce. And how do we get more kids interested in construction-based careers? Because it really can be a strong solution for their life outside of high school. We know that the average age of somebody going into the construction trades is 28 years of age. And that tells me that between graduating high school at 18 to entering the industry at 28, there's 10 years of where they might be trying to figure out what they're going to do with their lives. Mm-hmm. And we know from kids who go into the industry right out of high school, usually by the time that they're 23 to 25, they own their own truck. They've got, you know, all of their tools. Many of them are on their way to home ownership. And speaking for some, you know, a nephew of mine who is in the HVAC system and is close to becoming a journeyman. He's got all the toys. He's got the dirt bikes. He's got the jet ski, because working in construction really can afford you a very comfortable lifestyle. So if I could make that royal decree, it would probably be to the parents to get into the high school, the college counselors in the high schools. It's to get them to understand more that if you have to work with your hands and come home and wash your hands at the end of the day, is that that's not a job that's beneath you. It's hard work, but it's good, honest work. And certainly it's necessary for the ongoing economic development of our nation. You know, 3D printing is a pretty cool technology, but I haven't seen any structure that's 3D printed where I would want to live and lay my head at night.
Oh, no. I think not to downplay. I mean, I'm sure it works well for some, but I'm much more comfortable with a builder's exchange member taking care of my structures. Hey, thank you, Tim. This has been such a great discussion. One final thing I just want to, you know, we always like to ask our guests, you know, do you have any activities coming up in the, you know, months or year ahead? How can people get it, you know, contact you or contact the Sacramento Regional Builders Exchange? I just always want to give you that. I call it the egregious plug section of our meeting, but it's very important because there's good stuff you're doing.
I'm happy to do that. Yeah. So if you are a tradesperson or a company owner in the commercial construction industry, please visit our website at srbx.org to find out information about joining our organization and all the great things that we do. If you remember, we put on over 20 different networking events, and they must like them because they're always selling out. We've done 3 sold out golf tournaments this year. We've had 1 sold out clay shoot. We have another one coming up this fall. We have all kinds of classes and mixers that you could take advantage of, not to mention affinity programs for discounts for your health benefits, equipment rental, payroll, and fuel. So if you're not a member of a Builders Exchange, you should really come and check us out and support the Builders Exchanges in the communities where you work. Last, I'll invite your listeners to put May 3rd and 4th of 2023 on the calendar. We invite you to come out to Cosumnes River College down in South Sacramento. That's where we will be holding our 38th annual design build competition next spring. We anticipate having up to 50 high schools participating, and to really see kids coming out working with their hands and embarking on what could be the start of a promising career. It's really an incredible sight to see, and I would invite all your listeners to come out and check that out.
That is exciting. And with that, Tim Murphy, I just want to say a big thank you. You've been a great friend to the NFIB and a good partner with NFIB on the small business issues we've been working on together. Certainly a great partner to our great sponsor, Five Star Bank. And most importantly, a great partner to many small business owners out there and our future leaders, our future construction leaders that you so passionately believe in, and all that you're doing to get youth in construction through the Sacramento Regional Builders Exchange. Tim Murphy, thank you. I will also finally say that I know that we're kind of in the same neighborhood. The Sacramento Regional Builders Exchange in East Sacramento is almost a stone's throw from my house. We are long overdue for a cold beer summit to talk about the future of our small businesses. And so I'll make that happen as a thank you for this. for sure.
I will gladly see you at Lefty's when the temperature is not over 100 degrees.
Like yeah, let's wait a few weeks. Tim Murphy, thank you so much again, and very, very best to you and the Sacramento Regional Builders Exchange, and we look forward to having you back sometime in the future.
John, thanks very much, and thank you to NFIB for all that you do. It's greatly appreciated.
All right, take care and have a good one.
Thank you, John, and thank you, Tim Murphy, for your informative insights on this podcast. Again, we'd like to thank Five Star Bank for its generous support of this and future podcasts. You can find all NFIB California podcasts at nfib.com/ca/podcasts. That's nfib.com/ca/podcasts. You can also find our podcast on your favorite podcast app by searching NFIB California. I would also like to thank Multipoint Content Strategies for its production of this podcast. You can learn more about them at multipointstrategies.com. Why podcasts for small business? It has been NFIB's educational mission for nearly 80 years to remind policymakers that small businesses are not smaller versions of big businesses, and that a one-size-fits-all rule, regulation, or tax can do Main Street enterprises more harm than good. We hope these podcasts aid in better understanding. Finally, thank you to our listeners. If you like what you heard, please share this episode, subscribe, and give us a positive rating. We would appreciate it.